Welcome, everybody, to All About Symbian. This is Insight Podcast number 227, recording this on Thursday, the 8th of November 2012. No, we haven't gone away. We haven't all shriveled up and died. We're still here. All About Symbian team. Yes. That woohoo was from Rafe Blanford down in Sussex.
It was indeed. Hello, everybody. Thank you for listening.
And also we have David Gilson up in Hull.
Hello, Steve. Hello, Rafe. And hello, everybody that's listening.
Let's crack on with a little bit of chatty podcast, a few news items, a few items for discussion. Symbian is still live and kicking, but we have been comparing it with the new wave of Windows Phone. And specifically, everyone thought, Rafe, that I had a Lumia 920 running Windows Phone 8. In actual fact, you've got it, but we kind of worked in tandem to produce this low-light photo shootout. And people can see it. We'll put the link in the show notes. allaboutsymbian.com. But I think in summary, I would say that the 920's camera, this PureView Phase 2, does actually manage to get close to the 808 under some circumstances. And in some cases, in specifically controlled circumstances, it produces better photos. But overall, the 808 is still the camera champion. Would you agree?
I would. I mean, the thing about this is that they take really quite different approaches. We've covered this before on the podcast, but just to recap, you know, the 808's got the really big sensor size, and you know, the physical side of the sensor, and obviously it's got a big array of megapixels behind that as well. The 920 by comparison is actually fairly standard for, you know, a smartphone camera. You know, it's like you've got in things like the iPhone 5 or the Galaxy S3 or some of the HTC devices. But kind of the special sauce, in the same way that, you know, the big sensor size and the big megapixels are in the 808, is this optical image stabilization. And so it gives it, you know, a different set of advantages. I think you do have to add the caveat, this is when you're on fully automatic mode. So with both the 808 and the 920, It's pretty close. I think if you know what you're doing with the 808, you will be able to get better results in pretty much all situations, maybe with the exception of sort of very low light.
Well, if you take a tripod with you, of course you can level the playing field, as it were.
You can, and I think video as well. Video motion, probably the 920 does have an advantage there. So, you know, in the sense that the 808 remains absolutely supreme, I think that's fair enough. But you do need to know what you're doing. And, you know, that's not really the way people use camera phones. You know, if you're that kind of photography, the chances are you probably have, you know, a pro level camera as well. Yeah. And so when we're talking about day-to-day use, and not even the average user, just, you know, even if you're, you know, quite a camera nut, you are just going to get your camera phone out, you know, take a quick few snaps. And most of the time we're on fully automatic. You know, even, you know, people like Steve, who's really into his camera phones, I think probably 95% of the time you're on fully automatic settings. Steve, is that a fair comment?
Absolutely, yes. I almost never veer into creative unless it's to set it to 8 megapixel mode or to a lower megapixel mode so I get greater pure view zoom out of it. So, yes.
And so because of that, you know, it's really only fair to compare them in those modes. You know, I think, you know, with the caveat that the 808 has all this extra stuff, and that's kind of surprised me that the 920 got as close to the 808 as it did. But it sort of goes to show the importance of something like optical image stabilization. You know, the things that struck me were it's getting rid of blurry cam, it's the low light stuff, but also it's a bit more forgiving when you take a photo. If you move slightly, it doesn't matter. Whereas I'm sure, you know, people have used the 808, and the same applies to the N8, the N86, and other Nokia, you know, camera heroes. You know, you can get shots that don't quite work, whereas with the 920, you have to work quite hard to make it go wrong.
Yeah, the number of test shots people have taken with things like the Nokia N8 and the 808 with the mechanical shutter button. Yes, it's great having that, but even with the steadiest hand in the world, there is still that risk of just jarring the phone at the exact instant you're taking the photograph. And even I've actually resorted on plenty of occasions, especially in low light, on the 808 to using the on-screen shutter icon, because it just involves less jarring of the phone, and this OIS completely takes that away.
That's right. And, you know, when you then consider that the 920 is in a relatively slimline package compared to the 808, or at least let's say that the camera module isn't dominating the design of the device in the same way.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's probably not unreasonable to say that the 920 is the best overall camera phone experience that you can get on the market right now. And it is notably ahead of things like, you know, the iPhone 5, the Galaxy S3, all those which kind of, I think, sit in a group together right at the top. In, you know, when you've got good lighting conditions, the 920 is about the same as all of those, and I think the 808 does have an advantage there. But, you know, most of the time you're not in perfect conditions. And I think the other exception you have to really draw attention to is the flash. The Xenon flash is able to freeze things, you know, when it's very dark or when you use it in a way that an LED flash can't, even though it's, you know, the next generation, it's a high pulse LED and all of that. So if you're taking a photo in kind of a low light environment with lots of moving people, the 808 and other phones with Xenon flashes are always going to be superior. But I was actually came away more impressed than I thought I would be. And the 920 certainly deserves the PureView label as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. And the moment I get my own 920 for any length of time, the very first thing I'll do is arrange a pub meet, and I'll have all sorts of low light tests with lots of real moving active people in the shots on the Lumia 920, the 808 and various other phones, whatever people tend to bring. So do watch this space for that. Talking of events, Rafe, just briefly, did you want to plug your event next week?
Yes, I do. This is the 361 degrees event. As people who listen to the podcast may know, I record another mobile-related podcast with Ben Smith and Ewan McLeod from Wireless Worker and Mobile Industry Review, respectively. And on November the 16th, we're going to be holding an event in London where we're going to do a live recording. It will kick off about 6:30. It's going to be taking place near Shoreditch, and we'll have all the details in the show notes. But the topic is going to be Desktop Internet is Dead, Long Live Mobile Internet. It's kind of part of Internet Week Europe. So if you're curious about coming along to a live podcast, you know, recording, please come along and you'll be free to ask questions from the audience. It's kind of a question and answer format rather than people just talking from the stage for half an hour. And I'd love to meet some people face to face. So please come and say hello and introduce yourself.
Yeah, and look out for Rafe's full review of that 920 we're just talking about. It's going to go up on allaboutwindowsphone.com in the next day or so as you listen to this podcast. And also there's an article from me on actually where to jump to should you want to jump from Symbian. Do you go to Android, to Windows Phone, to iOS, or should you stay with Symbian? That's a feature coming up on allaboutsymbian.com very, very shortly. David, let's just change the pace slightly. You've been looking at some what the heck is MMORPG? Do let me in on the secret.
MMORPG is a massively multiplayer online role-playing game.
Just falls off the tongue, doesn't it?
It does. Really. Well, if you're like me, at least it conjures up lots of fun memories. So, okay. Hello to any Star Wars Galaxies players.
Is it any good?
it was surprisingly good. I was rather skeptical that it could work. The thing that I really expected about this is that I thought it would have been a desolate place, just full of non-player characters issuing quests. And while there was plenty of that, there was lots and lots of players walking around. Now, I will not pretend that these were all Symbian players, because Warspear Online is available for iOS and Android too, but it is available for Symbian, which is quite a thing to have such an expansive game in your pocket that you can connect to any time.
Is it easier for the users on iOS and Android with perhaps slightly bigger and higher resolution screens? Is a Symbian user at a disadvantage at this sort of game?
Yes.
That's your answer.
Yes, yeah,
that's your excuse, is it, David?
Yes, Riff, that's right. Yeah, because the thing with MMORPG games is that they necessarily have a very sort of complicated and expansive user interface, because you have to have like lots of like magic spells and potions in little task and ability slots along the bottom of the screen or top of the screen. And I think Warspear Online can have up to 8, but you can only see 3 of them when you're in portrait mode. You have to turn it into landscape mode to be able to see everything. Whereas the Android and iOS versions can show up to 5, which you'll actually see if you look at the review, because Warspear Online also would not work with the screenshot software we use. So I'm very sorry, everyone. I had to use screenshots from another platform. Yeah. Now, the landscape thing was a bit confusing, because when you're on the menu screen and you're rolling your character, etc., and you try turning the thing into landscape, because, for example, I was reviewing on an E7 and I wanted to type in a character name with a QWERTY keyboard, it wouldn't let me do that. It says, we do not support landscape mode. So I was a bit reticent about doing it in gameplay mode, but the game will actually play quite happily in landscape mode. As far as the gameplay goes, it wasn't a great experience for me. I found it a little bit stilted. There was a lot of walking around and having to be getting killed and then resurrected in the newbie town and then having to walk back to where you were killed and where you were grinding away on a quest.
Isn't that what you expect from an MMORPG, though? Isn't that what they're all about?
Well, it is. Well, yes and no, because it's part of the control interface of this game, because the way you move around is you tap on the screen to where you want to walk to. But the game map is divided up into little squares, and you have to get to the edge. And within each square, the screen just scroll around. But then when you get to the edge and the next map section, you have to wait for it to load. So you have to go through several loading processes to get from one place to another. And that was a little frustrating. I'd rather it just flowed and streamed my whole way around the map. But it's still it's worth a look. It's free to play. The way they make money is that if you want to be able to not do the sort of walking around that I was just complaining about, you need something called Miracle Coins, which you purchase with real life money. Yeah, so that's where the rub is. But yeah, it's in the Nokia store, and it's at least working on Nokia Bell devices, which is what I tested on, but it's been around for a long time, so I wouldn't be surprised if it works on legacy versions of the operating system too. It's Warspear Online.
Yeah, very, very nice. Always good to see new games arriving. In fact, Rafe, I've been putting up on all sorts of little quick game previews as part of the Flow section all about Symbian. I'm still staggered, really, just how many games are coming along. They're not all full 3D rendered epics like on iOS and Android, but there's still a really good selection of new casual games appearing.
Yeah, I think that's right. And the thing is about these casual games, you know, I'm continuing to download them too. And I actually sort of have been enjoying reading Steve's Flow because sometimes it gives me a shortcut to a new distraction. Now, you download them and you play them for maybe a couple of weeks. And I tend to then, you know, forget about them. And sometimes I'll come back to them. But it's important to have kind of a flow of new games so that, you know, there's something fresh. And yes, we all have our favourite games that you return to time and time again, in a bit something like the Angry Birds titles or, you know, Pool Online. I'm sure everyone has their favourites. It's nice to see this new blur. And the same actually applies to some of the apps as well. You know, there's still, you know, apps coming out. And I think if, you know, you'd asked, you know, basically almost 2 years on from February the 11th, whether there'd still be a good flow of new titles coming out, quite a few people have been, you know, somewhat sceptical. But it does seem to be holding steady. Of course, it's not the massive flood that you're seeing elsewhere, but there's more than enough to keep the interest, you know, and get a bit of freshness on your device each week.
Yeah, and several of the new titles do actually use realistic 3D physics, well, kind of 2D / 3D physics, as Angry Birds does. I was reviewing Fantasy Car, which again we'll put a link in the show notes, and it's really good physics engine based game where you roll either a lunar rover or a Curiosity rover or a tractor or a you know, these massive monster trucks over various landscapes and obstacles and bash your way through girders and beams and barrels and so forth, with really pretty good graphics, pretty average sound, but great, great fun, and actually based on real world physics, so that anything can happen at any level. And you know, you bash a girder and it flies in a different way than it did the last time round, and you have to find a different way of bashing through the obstacles to the finish. So really, really quite a lot of fun. That's Fantasy Car. I don't know whether either of you tried that, but it's really quite slick.
I haven't tried that yet, but I did try Genius Button Football, which was, well, there's both a paid version and a free version, which you described as kind of Subutio for the smartphone, which I think is a pretty fair description. You know, of course, it's not kind of got the immersive nature of some of these 3D footballing titles, but actually something that you can pick up and play for a few minutes. And, you know, obviously you can, you know, take a break halfway through if you've got lots of distractions going on. Those games are sometimes quite useful. So that was another one I thought was worth a download.
There's one that's I'll recommend as well. If there's anyone who used to play on their Amstrads or Commodores or Spectrums back in the 80s when you were a teenager like me, you may remember Super Bomberman. It was also known as Dino Blaster. There's a repackaged version of that for Symbian in the obvious Nokia store now called Super Robot.
Okay. So go look for that. Talking of things rolling out, Bell Refresh, which we thought had kind of stopped really from Nokia. We thought they got held up by operator approval around the world. That's now started to roll out again to more of the Symbian 3 generation. I know, David, you noticed it on your N8, which hadn't previously had a Bell refresh, and that's now fully up to date. But all sorts of people in the comment thread were saying, yes, yes, mine's now got it as well. So whatever the blockage was, it seems to have cleared. And hopefully, if you plug in your E7, C7, N8, or C601, and it hadn't previously had Bell refresh, if you've got a genuine unlocked device, i.e. not network operator branded, then it should now have Bell refresh, we think. But as ever, comments welcome in the various comment threads on the site. How's it working for you, David? Nice and smooth now?
Yes, it's brilliant. I mean, obviously, I already had a lot of the widgets with the application update they pushed, but it's great to have the latest version.
Yeah, Rafe, I was going to do a story on this, and maybe I still will, but you can get a device and you get patched from Anna to Bell and then Bell to Bell refresh, and you get various software updates in the meantime, which patch it maps and they patch the home screen widgets, and you end up with a kind of almost a Frankenstein OS under the hood. And maybe I'm being paranoid about this, but at some point, it's kind of best just to back up your data, make a note of your settings, and then completely wipe the whole thing and relay the firmware from Nokia Suite, isn't it? And then you can kind of start with a known good build of the OS and everything clean, lean, and efficient. Is that the way to go? Do you think you'd bother?
I'm not sure I'd bother. I've been rather unkind to Steve in the past because I think he's a bit paranoid about the need to reset devices all the time. I think it's fair to say that if you want to get the absolute optimum performance, you know, starting from fresh is going to be a good idea because inevitably cruft builds up. But, you know, the modern mobile platforms are reasonably robust and I would honestly avoid doing it unless something goes wrong or it's really obviously slowed down. And quite often then it's something you've installed in particular, which you can then get rid of and will fix that situation. But yes, if you've got, you know, a spare couple of hours, because this does take a bit of time to do, you know, you reset the device, you make sure you've got the latest firmware on it. And because quite a lot of these updates are, you know, sitting SW update, it is a reasonably automatic process. So, but you know, will have to tap on the button every now and then. So you can do it maybe while you're doing something else. The thing that does take a bit more time is installing your favorite apps from the Nokia store. So it really depends how many you've got there. If you're the sort of person who's got 30, 40 apps, you might think twice about this. If you mainly just use what's out the box, yeah, it's a good idea. But it's interesting that, you know, we've continued to get these updates and, you know, these devices still remain, you know, actually pretty capable. They may not be quite as slick or as shiny or as good to look at as, you know, the thing that's sitting in the high street right now. But in terms of actually getting stuff done, they're quite capable. I think where the sort of the caveat for that comes in is maybe they're not as intuitive or the user experience isn't quite as smooth. But if you're already used to using them, you know, quite a lot of the time you're not going to get that much extra functionality by moving to a new device. So it's always an interesting, people ask me, should I upgrade to get such and such a thing? And it really depends on whether you think you're going to use that feature or whether something's really annoyed you. You know, there are legitimate reasons for upgrading. I think particularly now with the Symbian hardware, you can say that you want more recent hardware in terms of screen resolution or a faster processor, maybe in some cases, you know, a certain app or things like that. But you know, yes, if you look at things like, you know, maps or the location apps, for example, I would say they're still superior on the Symbian platform compared to Windows Phone. It is a lot closer now with Windows Phone 8, and you know, a lot of people have asked me, should I upgrade from, you know, my Symbian device to Windows Phone with you know, 7.5? I kind of offered the caveat, yes, if you want to, but it's there's going to be plenty of people who don't because there are missing pieces. With Windows Phone 8, that gap, I think, narrows considerably. And there are still things that people may miss, you know, HDMI out or FM transmitter hardware, for example, or battery life is another one. But there's plenty to recommend as well. And that kind of comes back to what we said about the camera in the beginning. I'd now say the 920 probably offers the best all-round camera experience. That certainly wasn't true with the original Lumia devices. But you're right, you know, don't forget, you know, there are plenty of updates out there. Make sure you've got them installed and it's up to date. Although I guess with all of that, we should say if it's working fine for you at the moment and you don't particularly want the updates, don't install it because things do sometimes go wrong.
I will just add quickly that normally I wouldn't reset my device. I would just keep going cruft and all. But especially with the home screen widgets situation, I did actually find that resetting my device made the difference between getting some and all of the widgets.
So, David, I guess we should ask, are you actually using some of the extra widgets you got by resetting the device? And was it worth it?
The one thing that made it all worthwhile for me was the multi-line calendar application widget. It's just lovely to have a scrolling agenda on the home screen.
Yeah, no, I can agree with that. That's actually, I think, the widget that I found most useful of the new ones. I mean, some of the time-saving ones like NFC on and off, great, but I don't really use them very much. And I kind of like some of the new clock styles. But you're right, in terms of utility, that's probably the most helpful.
Yeah. Talking of going backwards in time and forwards in time and upgrades and downgrades, I did a feature on the site called Going Retro, How Far Could You Go Back? And I'm interested in your guys' take. The basic thesis here, and I'll give you guys time to think, is that, okay, the current Symbian device you've got, you know, fulfills our needs, does everything we want to. But what about last year's device? What about the year before that? What about, for example, in my case, the N86, which I loved, a little phone. It's okay, it's got a small screen, but basically in terms of functionality, it's got a great camera, and it's got the same sat-nav, the same real-time navigation, free forever. It's got basically the same application set, and yes, I think that could just about do what I need. But for me, the big cutoff in terms of how far do you go back? Do you go back to the E90? Do you go back to the N95? Could you live with an N70? Could you live with a 9500? For me, the cutoff point in Symbian's history, the point at which I wouldn't go any further back, is actually the point at which Nokia made it free navigation. I mean, it's not that big a deal to get an old E90, for example, Rafe, and then pay whatever it is, £10 for a year's navigation. It's not the end of the world in terms of cost, but it's the hassle of having to do that. And then if you change your SIM card, you think you have to reacquire the licenses. It's just hassle after hassle. So for me, I'd point to the N96 or the N86 as far back as I could personally go. But what about you, Rafe? Any thoughts?
Well, it's a tricky one. It's going to sound awful saying this, but I don't really like going back in time if I don't have to. I like my modern device. I like the big screens. You know, I like the fact that they're fast. I like the fact the screens are easier to see when you're out in the daylight and all those sorts of things. And honestly, for me, a lot of it is about screen size. I have got used to using the bigger screen. So perhaps I'd be happy going back to some of the communicators. But I suspect speed, in particular, you know, browsing on the web, I would miss a lot because I found I'm doing more and more kind of mobile web browsing. It's not something that everyone does. I know, Steve, for example, you don't do all that much mobile browsing, but yeah. I'm doing more of it. And just it's putting your device out, doing a quick search, get a bit of information, an email. That said, I was very, very fond of the kind of the E61, the E71 and the E72. I think the E61 is probably going back a little bit too far for me. But if I had to, I could live with the E71 and I'd probably opt for the E72. And then there's the E6 as well, if I can't quite bear to go back that many years. But now, those devices are probably the ones that I have some of the fondest memories of, and even now they're still very useful. If you wanted to kind of long battery life, they had the BP4L battery, and it would regularly last 2 or 3 days on a single charge. It was easy to respond to email very quickly. You know, it actually, the screen size was relatively small, but because it was in that almost landscape orientation, it almost felt a bit bigger. It sounds counterintuitive, I know. I think that would be it for me. And I'd agree with you. The maps thing, I would miss a great deal. And now it's not terribly easy to get Google Maps on those devices. There are SIS files floating around out there if you're looking for them. So I can actually understand people who are still on those devices because they have a lot of great characteristics. But I'm not really very retro in my outlook or my fashion, so I don't really want to be very retro with my phones either. I'm sorry, Steve.
David, how far back could you go?
I think I'm going to be quite similar to Rafe here. The one point where I will differ is that when we go back to the older QVGA devices, they often had these transflective screens, which actually made them eminently more visible in outdoor conditions than a lot of the devices we have now. But yes, I think it was particularly the up-to-date web browsing and also the range of apps, even the range of apps that Windows Phone have, which obviously isn't as much as Android and iOS. I would really miss having certain functionality that I do now that integrates with modern services that have been created since first devices came out. Thinking back, though, I mean, the V72 was a great tool for me, and I was able to do a heck of a lot with it. So I think if I had to, I would go back to that, because, like Rafe was saying, it had a very good camera. Screen visibility was good, even though it was only a QVGA screen. And I think that's the thing that makes me sort of shudder the most when you say about doing this, Steve. It's like the relatively cramped screen resolution now when you think about looking at emails, particularly HTML emails and web browsing. But I think a lot of the things you could do. So yeah, that would be my main sort of messenger and phone device.
Yeah, I think I'd also say that with some of the devices, I'd probably wake up screaming from a nightmare if I had to go back to using them. The 3650 with that circular keyboard rather springs to mind. Yeah. But there are some form factors that, you know, I really miss. Thinking about the P800 or the clamshell devices, the P800, I think, was, you know, quite ahead of its time in terms of being that idea of a touchscreen, you know, a tablet almost. But I suspect the software now would feel quite old and underpowered. But I think the biggest issue for me here is that the way we use smartphones has changed so much. And this plays into what David was saying about apps and services. A lot of the stuff I'm doing on my phone, you know, it's coming in from other services, you know, things like Twitter and Facebook. And obviously, in that instance, there's Gravity and will work on all the older devices. But it is a better experience when you've got maybe a bigger screen or a more recent device. It's got that extra bit of oomph. But it's also, you know, all sorts of other kind of usages, you know, web browsing being the one I talked about, but there are others as well. And the devices are kind of optimized around that rather than around, you know, communications, calling, texting, or sort of being a phone, if you like. I almost divide the smartphone age into, you know, there was this idea that you added a computer to a telephone, and that was kind of what the smartphone was originally about. But we've almost moved on from that where, you know, the telephone, the phone bit is almost an afterthought to the smart bit. You know, it's almost, you know, shifting around, if you like, the opposite approach. And so, you know, there's devices in one era and device in the other era. And honestly, it's kind of, you know, the dividing line between the two is touch, but it's not quite that simple because, you know, it's not a clear-cut definition. And that's why I'd find it difficult to go back to devices more than a couple of years old. It's not just about kind of the extra benefits of, you know, progress from modern technology and faster, shinier and all of that. I think there's a fundamental difference in the way we use phones now.
Yeah, I'd still like to see a Nokia E90, but with a massively upped processor, far more RAM, far more graphical oomph. I think that might still be quite a special device and form factor, and it's still a form factor I miss in the modern world, but anyhow.
Yeah, no, I'd agree. I'd love to see that kind of device arrive with, well, I guess it would have to be Windows Phone now, but, you know, okay, let's dream, have a Symbian One as well, have, you know, boot between the two if you like, because I think that mini computer that's even smaller than kind of some of the tablets and the Ultrabooks out there, and presumably you'd be able to, you know, shrink it down from what was a fairly brick-like device to something a bit thinner. I mean, except it's going to be thicker than your average smartphone, but, you know, have that, you know, think about any of the modern touch tablets and add kind of maybe half the thickness again, but have a, you know, a full-size physical keyboard on there. I guess someone's going to have to mention Sine inevitably. You still haven't been able to beat that keyboard. So, yeah, let's have something like that, please.
I did notice that when I put up my April Fool, I've mentioned this before, the Nokia E710, I think I called it, basically, with the E7 form factor, but with a huge battery compartment, huge battery, and the N8 camera and Xenon flash. People went absolutely nuts for the design, so I think there's a market there, Nokia, if you're listening. One more Symbian device, please, with the best of all worlds. Thank you.
There's a market for every device, Steve. It's just how big that market is. I think sometimes the dreams are for a market of one, sometimes they're a bit bigger. It'll be kind of interesting to know. I guess these days you need to have a device that will sell in, you know, probably several million before it becomes economically justifiable, at least for a big company. I mean, actually, I mean, a good example of this is actually Jhana Mobile, who are kind of working on MeeGo devices now. They're set to kind of unveil the first one quite shortly. I think that's a good example. You know, they want to be mass market in the sense they want to sell, you know, tens of millions of devices. But I think initially, at least, there'll be a lot of appeal from kind of a geek point of view. And in that case, it's kind of driven by the open source software rather than a particular hardware feature. But, you know, I wonder if there's not a place for, you know, companies out there to maybe think about, can you create a very custom hardware? Because, you know, we have almost had a market that was full of different devices boiled down into a market now where, you know, the touch slate kind of dominates every other form factor, and there is very little activity outside, you know, that one one type of device, which seems a real shame for anyone who's kind of grown up through the smartphone era when we had QWERTY devices, clamshells, flip devices, and everything else.
It's quite shocking, really, how the scale of the industry has changed. Back in the 1990s, when I was a lad, and you were definitely a lad, right? we had, as you say, the Scion organizers and the clamshell Series 3, Series 5. And some of these devices were pronounced, you know, huge sales successes, but they were still only actually selling 100,000, 150,000, which today would be a complete abject failure for any device. I remember the point at which Scion said, we've sold our 1 millionth organizer. And we thought, wow, a million? And these days, if a device doesn't sell a million units within its first month, it's pronounced a failure. So it is amazing how the scale of the industry has changed.
It is, and I guess it's a reflection of how, you know, this kind of technology has gone from being very much early adopters and just a few people to almost everyone having them. And you know, smartphones are now in many markets, more than 50% of people own a smartphone. And as you say, it's measured in millions. And this was kind of brought back to me when I was looking at recent sales numbers for Symbian, and I was actually trying to work out when Nokia had last sold so few devices with reference to the most recent quarterly results, which was, I think, 6.3 million. And you have to go back to 2005 to find a similar level. In one sense, that seems a long time ago, but it's not really, because it should be said that those 6 million or so devices that they sold, I can't remember exactly which quarter of 2005 was, represented something like 60 or 70% of the market. And now, you know, you're talking nearer the 200 million mark. I think in the latest set, it's something probably around the 150 million mark or so. So the kind of adoption of smartphones has accelerated massively. And as you say, you know, Steve, has changed almost out of all recognition. And now, you know, it's kind of, ooh, someone's actually using a feature phone. And that's kind of the unusual thing, whereas it always used to be spotting a smartphone was kind of something to make you smile.
Yes, yes. The proportion of smartphones to feature phones is growing and growing and growing. And of course, many of the feature phones, famously like Nokia's Asha devices, are now being reclassified as smartphones. So but we're running long on this podcast, Rafe, so we better stop it there. But thank you for your input. And thank you also to David Gilson. Any last words from you?
I would just say keep an eye on All About Symbian. We'll still be covering all the latest applications and news that as it happens in the Symbian world.
We will indeed. And we'll find out why Steve has put a 3,000 milliamp hour battery in his 808 in the next podcast. I don't really understand. It's got a completely replaceable battery, so why do you need to put an even bigger one in it and make it even thicker? But that's a bit of a trailer for next time.
Yeah, but it also makes it look less like a camera-humped phone, more like an actual camera, which many people have said is a good thing. But yes, let's discuss that next. This has been the All About Symbian Insight podcast, and we'll catch you all in another week or so. Bye for now.